Hello and welcome to Dual Citizens. My name is David Auld.
And I'm Stephen McAlpine.
Now, normally on Dual Citizens, what we would do is go through a number of current affairs topics, discussing each in turn, but not today, Steve. What's going on?
Yeah, look, this week, we're going to look at the big monolithic, big rock in the jar this week, which is the religious discrimination issues coming up in Parliament, both at a state level in New South Wales and at a national level. It's a big, big topic.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, there has been a lot of activity at federal and state level with legislation this last week or so, and it's hit the media big time. What's going on?
Oh, man. So, what is going on? Well, here in New South Wales, as I was getting the train into our brand new studios, by the way, can we just say nice?
Impressive.
Love it. And yeah. I like the colour coordination we've managed to get going here.
Yeah, I always phone you before to say, what are
we
you wearing?
We do. It's very important. Sartorial elegance is required here. What's been going on, mate? So, let's do New South Wales first. The new Labour government from last year promised to get a bill around so-called conversion therapy. And so that legislation basically was passed through last night. Late night sitting, they pushed all the way through to 6:30 in the morning to get this and another piece of legislation done. Look, it's not perfect by any means, and there was a real push at the end to get some amendments in to sharpen it up, and we can talk about those things perhaps in a moment. But the bill went through unamended. What that does mean, of course, is that the Green Party and people like Alex Greenwich here in New South Wales couldn't get their amendments in either, which I don't think any of us would have been happy with.
Yeah.
So that's gone through here in New South Wales.
Explain a little bit about what that is about.
Sure.
We know the conversion therapy yeah. thing from Victoria.
Yeah.
Is that the same as New South Wales?
It's not like Victoria. So the Victoria bill is worse. It's a bit better here in New South Wales. One of the reasons is that the Labour Party here are not as extreme left as they are in Victoria. And secondly, they actually have genuinely been listening to religious groups, and especially across the west of Sydney, where there are serious votes at stake for them. What's it all about? Well, it's about this notion that we can't be forcing people into changing their sexual orientation, and there's sort of an overlap with the trans issue as well. Now, in one sense, it's dealing with something that's not actually happening. So the really yeah. coercive stuff, you know, and the electrotherapy and all those kinds of things just doesn't happen anymore. And the church has walked away from that a long time ago, almost like they're catching up with debates that were going on in the churches in the 80s and the 90s. So in one sense, it's legislating or pretending to
legislate.
Yeah, claiming to legislate against something that's not actually happening, and all the stuff that all those kinds of things are illegal anyway. What it's really doing, of course, is saying you're not allowed to hold this point of
yes.
view and advocate it to others. And so we're at this curious thing now where parents are allowed to have discussions with their kids, but we're still not sure whether they can say, actually, no, we're going to watch and wait. If you've got gender dysphoria, we're just going to wait and
yeah.
see what happens.
And in Victoria, the sort of sweet looking cartoon advertising came out,
oh,
with very
yeah.
ranty preacher. So
that's right.
It feels like the two words that I would say are horse and Trojan.
Yeah, so it's softer here in New South Wales.
Yeah.
Again, like we haven't got everything through. There may be
yeah.
some political lessons there for us on that.
So it could be a better outcome in New South Wales, or do you think it's...
Oh, no, well, we got what we got now.
Yeah?
It's through, mm. and it could have been better, but we are where we are. And I think realistically, you've got to do a bit of realpolitik about it. We've probably got the best that we could get. And that's actually quite unnerving for some people. I mean, there were some arguments which just hold the line, all or nothing.
Yeah.
The reality in New South Wales was the government was determined to get some legislation in, and if this wasn't going to happen, there was every likelihood they went to the left.
To the left, yep. So, I mean, everything feels like zero-sum game at one level, and that's complex.
Yeah.
What's the path forward for the federal legislation? Explain a little bit about the
yeah.
RDA.
So federal legislation is a little bit different. So we're looking at the broader issue of religious discrimination, which of course has been an ongoing conversation ever since the marriage vote, way back whenever that was now. Gosh, it seems like, you know, you and I were kids.
A universe ago.
Well, in every way, right? We'll talk about that a bit later. So what what both sides have pledged to, and of course Labor are now in government, is to bring out a religious discrimination bill. And so the Australian Law Reform Commission have just issued their report. And what they want to do is remove some of the protections that religious organisations, and really it's going to come, the big debate is going to be over schools, but other organisations as well, remove some of their protections which are currently in the Sex Discrimination Act, where, without getting too technical, Section 38 basically goes, this doesn't apply to, for example, a school where you kind of want to get teachers and staff who think and act consistently with the ethos of the school. Yeah.
So is this a messaging thing about that's negative discrimination? So there's the ARLA, you know, Australian Law Reform Commission.
Yeah.
And we're going, there's a positive discrimination thing going
on. So rather than saying you're not allowed to discriminate against people except when you are, they're suggesting to remove that and instead put equivalent, well, the question is, will there be equivalent, but put equivalent protections into a religious discrimination bill. But we haven't seen the bill.
No.
So we don't know.
You don't want to give something up and it doesn't come back.
That's right. And that was always been the debate all along. Yeah. And we had it way back when we were debating the marriage thing in Parliament, and the government at the time, even the Liberal government went, we'll deal with that later. And here we are years later, still waiting for it to be done.
7 years later, and it feels like it has not been.
Well, it's been a long 7 years.
Yeah.
If ever seven stood for eternity, maybe that's the one. So where are we at the position now? Well, we got this suggestion from the Law Reform Commission. The government, the Labor government, went, well, look, we're not going to put anything forward unless we can get bipartisan agreements.
Yeah, and look, I think Anthony Albanese, he feels like he wants some nice, you know, he's maybe got a bit of a bloodied nose from previous situations.
Well, he got burned on the Voice referendum.
So you think that he's looking for a peaceable solution that's going to solve and dial things down a bit?
I think so. I think we don't always want to think the worst of our politicians. I know we want to do that. You get the sense they're genuinely going, we just don't need another huge fight.
Ultra war.
At the same time, it's really politically, it's a lovely political position to be in, isn't it? It's damned if you do, damned if you don't for the other side, because they can easily, at the end of the day, go, look, we offered, but the Liberals aren't coming to the party. The Liberals seem to be going, well, in one sense, they're going, No, this is your problem. You're in government, you know. Do you want us to be in government? But at the same time, there's now some debate open. And it's going to be over the issues that we discussed, like what are the boundaries? Do we want to talk about behavior? Do we want to talk about belief?
And that's going to be a critical issue going forward.
Huge going forward, because actually this is the raison d'etre for religious schools and other organizations, right? It's parents effectively coming together saying, we want to raise our kids in a certain way. We don't want to tell other people what to do. We want a quality education, but education is holistic. It comes with a whole way of living, and we want the freedom to do that within what we understand
is a
good life.
And that's going to be something we're going to discuss.
We'll chat about that a little bit later. So that's kind of the political lay of the land. It's kind of been legislated, all up for debate on the federal level. Everyone getting involved. But probably what we want to think about is how did we end up here, and what are the stuff that we want to really be chewing on as we consider these things. So, Steve, legislation passed in New South Wales, legislation being debated at the federal level. Not great outcomes. How do we get here?
Well, I think we haven't seen where things have come in religious, how things have moved so quickly. Right? So you think of Australia as it started, that it was very clear that it was going to be a secular place, but you have freedom of religion. So you go to every regional town in Australia, and the main street is Equality Street, because there's a Catholic church and there's an Anglican church and there's a Presbyterian church and there's a Wesley Methodist. And that's how it was.
Yeah.
Everyone's equal and everyone comes under those banners. And then a bit like America too, that they couldn't figure out how to deal with other religions once they came in and had to work on that. But suddenly you've got this secular frame sitting in the midst that's saying, actually, we're the preference point, we're the default position in reality. And although that began by looking neutral, it's not neutral anymore. Yeah. The secular frame is quite hostile, very hostile, to much of the Christian framework.
So it's what we might call a hard secular thing rather than the soft secular. Yeah. There's different secularities, is that the word?
Yeah, there are.
Secularisms, aren't there?
Well, we're talking about the difference between pluralism, which is sort of generous pluralism, and this current secular frame, which says, here's what reality needs to look like. And I think some of our opponents are very strong in that. And their myth is, well, we just believe the baseline reality of life. And you religious people have got all this stuff junked on the top.
So that starts to impinge then, doesn't it, on when we gather, when we associate ourselves, use the technical term, to do certain things. Mm-hmm. It normally used to be, well, go and do your thing. But now when we gather, so for example, in a faith school, this hard secularism is going, we want in on that. We want to tell you what to do in there. So how have we got to that point where that's happening?
Well, I think 40 years ago, if you go around parent-controlled Christian schools, for example, they in the last 2 or 3 years, they've all celebrated their 40th birthdays. Why? What was happening? Well, 40 years ago, Christian parents were looking at the state system and say, I want to bring my children up Christianly because it doesn't seem as Christian anymore. And they had the freedom from the government to form these schools. And those schools then, as they grew, realized they needed more funding. And, you know, it was a little bit hokey, some of it in the early day. You build your own building and Christian education was how many animals go into the ark, you know, and times that for your maths. And suddenly they wanted to open to mission.
Right.
We want to and somehow federal funding and state funding gets tied to that and the schools explode.
Yeah.
What you find is unique in Australia, 30-something percent of Australian families, secular or religious, send their children to an independent school.
And that's not bad for the government just on the numbers, is it?
No. Because they spend a lot of money.
Well, they fund it. They fund the schools, but they put less per child, per student.
A lot less.
Than they do for the state schools.
Well, a recent example, a state school near me that was rebuilt at huge cost compared to what a Christian school could build its building.
Yeah.
But the issue then becomes that as Christianity sort of eclipsed as the main framework in Australia, it's not that there was a vacuum, or there is a vacuum, but nature abhors that.
Yeah.
And the current framework that's hard secularism, that I think, sees itself as pitching a vision of human flourishing that is antithetical to where the Christian framework is, and it brooks no rival.
Well, let's just talk a bit for a minute what that vision actually is. In a nutshell, what's this vision of what the good life is?
Well, the good life is, I was at a school recently where I pitched a vision of it's all about you do you, and every year 12 student agreed.
In a
religious school.
Wow.
On the surface. Right, on the surface, because when I started to unpack what that meant, they couldn't quite articulate how you could do community or live with someone who disagrees with you.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is the vision of human flourishing that's not with Christianity is about yourself. It's the expressive individualism.
I'm the arbiter of what's true and right and good. Yeah.
And Carl Truman says that the shift is to the psychological self. So it's not about human flourishing in general, it's about my personal flourishing. And if your personal flourishing or beliefs transgresses mine, then we've got a problem.
So it's not even, it's not you do you anymore, it's you do me.
Exactly.
At any point where we interact, we must affirm, because the worst thing is not to be affirmed in who I am.
Yeah.
Which is antithetical to the gospel, because Jesus comes in and he just goes, what's his first recorded words? Repent.
and
believe the gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't say repent without giving
and Sam Albury says there's no point in the Bible where Jesus says the word expression comes after the word self.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's all theory. Let's think through a practical example of what it's looked like. You and I were talking about sports earlier. So Izzy Folau and all that kind
of stuff.
Really interesting. Because that's Australia's great religion, right? Apparently. But here's the greater religion taking over.
The greater religion of this, what I call the secular age, that framework of thinking about you do you and how it expresses itself through sexuality, gender, all those things, has tried to impose itself on sport. And what happened with Israel Folau, that issue, as you look at it from a few years away from it, it was about freedom of speech or expression at rugby league, rugby union, right?
However clunky it might be.
Yeah, and we can debate that, but that was the issue. With the Manly Seven and the Rugby League, where they were told this is the pride round, you're wearing the shirt.
That's right.
And the seven, mainly Pacific Islanders, said no. That was about, so the first one was what you're not allowed to say, Izzy Folau. This is what you must say.
Ooh, that sounds like a slippery slope to me,
it
Steve.
It does sound like a slippery slope.
I thought those things never happened.
They don't happen, of course. And then the third one was Andrew Thorburn losing his job as Essendon Football Club after a day through freedom of association, because he said nothing, did nothing.
So we've gone from what you're not allowed to say to what you must say to what you're not even allowed to be around when other people say.
Exactly. And I don't think that's a slippery slope. That's a watershed. So this decision about are humans this or are humans that takes you in very different directions.
And it's so intolerable to be associated even with this stuff, even if you said nothing. You're just on that, you're one side or the other.
Yeah, and that brings it back to the schools. So a faith-based school that wants to pitch a vision of human flourishing that's Christian to its secular students as well.
Yeah.
And because they want to love and look after them,
yeah,
and parents want them to, because there's something about a faith-based school that people think hits different. I'm going to say that.
Sure.
33% of Australians are sending their children to...
I'm on the council of such a school, and we're getting not just Christian. In fact, Christians are almost a minority.
Secularism does this,
yeah,
and everyone think, and church attendance is doing that in Australia.
Yeah.
But attendance at a Christian school is going through the roof.
And can I just add to that as well, that the opinion makers are not generally living in the same areas as the people who are making these choices. So
that's
here
right.
in Sydney, for example, it's the opinion makers are in one place, and then the sprawling west of Sydney is very, very different and making very different choices, but perhaps not aware of what's going on in the background.
That's right.
So they should be listening to us.
Yeah, they should be. Yeah. And the other thing I think too is if you go to a Christian school, you're going to what I call as an alternate ethical community.
Yeah.
And our governments up to this stage have been willing to fund, not just tolerate, alternate ethical communities that pitch a different vision of human flourishing.
Yeah.
And that is changing.
Right.
So if those who are opposed to belief and behavior being locked together, that's what we say as Christians, you can't do abstract belief without it on the ground. If those opposed to it are opposing it, they're saying you cannot, as a government, fund things that we think are dangerous and unhealthy. We do not view... It's not as if our opponents on this issue misunderstand what we believe.
Right.
They fully understand it and they don't like it.
They think
it's awful.
So we like to think we're a pluralistic society.
We like to.
We like to think we can all live in harmony together, this whole multiculturalism, there's ministers for multiculturalism and so forth. Can we actually do that? Can we actually live together in this way?
I don't know.
Tear ourselves apart.
Tearing apart. Was it Charles Murray's book, Coming Apart, or whatever it was called? We're finding ourselves at a polarizing culture, and polarized.
Mm.
Social media doesn't help that, right?
Yeah.
And we're not eyeballing our enemy as much as we used to. We just see something online.
Yeah.
But we have two competing visions of human flourishing in a post-Christian framework.
Yeah.
And that's why we're getting protection laws. That's why we're getting those things, is because we're fencing each other off as much as we can from the decisions of the other group and asking our government to maintain that tension. And the government itself is made up of people who hold all of those different views.
Right.
And so what we're finding is this tussle at a lobbying legislative level of how do we protect all these things? And I think they're oil and water and ultimately can't mix.
So they're just two utterly competing
visions
diametrically visions of what the good life is. What's really interesting to me is just talking about how you make the mix work. I'm pastoring in a church in the west of Sydney. I think we've got the biggest mix of people from all different backgrounds than anywhere else to the politicians in your electorate.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them coming together, united around the Lord Jesus Christ and the vision of the good life that he gives.
Well, this is the thing about the gospel. It does do that.
Yeah.
And you read in Ephesians that, Jesus is bringing together a people in Ephesus where there was the cult of Diana of the Ephesians, right? So, and it's a huge temple there.
Yes.
And, Paul says, here's the temple, here's the actual reality. And so there's two competing visions going there.
Yeah.
And you think the church didn't look like it was going anywhere then. And Diana of the Ephesians, everyone was in cheering for 2 hours for Diana of the Ephesians in Acts.
Who knows who she is now?
Well, that's right. And the church keeps going.
That's right. And yet what we've probably got to be realistic about is the scriptures from beginning to end are very clear that there is God's people.
Yeah.
And then there's the world.
We're not guaranteed that Christian schools will be allowed to continue.
Oh, yeah.
And no matter what we pray or whatever, it may not happen.
It may not happen. And we've just got to get ourselves realistic about it. Maybe that's the thing we'll turn to next.
Yeah, we will. Okay, Dave, we've talked some abstract things, we've talked legislative things, but it's when I open the paper online and the various dailies in have got pictures and articles from young people who are gender diverse and they're saying, I had a bad experience or I've gone through trouble. And it feels like every time this legislation comes up, there's 35 articles ready to go about that. What is going on?
They're always very good. What's going on? Well, it's really interesting. So look, clearly some people who are either have a sexual orientation, homosexual sexual orientation, or are struggling with their gender, feel out of place in a school community where they're not being affirmed in the way we spoke about earlier. They want to be affirmed and they don't like it. That's not right. They're not allowing me to be who I am.
So the big question is, are those kids getting kicked out of schools?
We can't find a single example of a kid. So we can go, oh, I didn't feel happy. And I don't mean to be dismissive of it, because I think one of the points we want to make is there is a genuine ideation that's going on here. There's a real kind of issue for these kids, these young people, and indeed many adults as well. Are the schools chucking them out? No, not one example. So when it was raised, and there was a whole ruckus a couple of years ago around this, not one example. Just I wasn't affirmed, or I wasn't allowed to bring my same-sex partner to the formal, which is a bit like going, I wasn't allowed to come and wear my full Labour Party outfit with the rosette to the Liberal Party fundraiser.
Yeah, so... Like, here's the pressure for Christian schools. Yeah. They're living in the grey zone between the church and the world. And as the world becomes less Christian, they're going, it's bleeding into us.
Yeah.
And how do we love these children and care for them without affirming them if the culture says, in order to love them and care for them, you must affirm them?
Well, that's the difficulty, right? And I'm just not sure if there's a middle ground there, which is kind of what we spoke about before. Mm. And the reality is, we've got these competing worldviews, and if a Christian school is going to, or a Muslim school, or a Jewish one Orthodox Jewish, is going to set out, here's what we think human flourishing looks like, a life ordered under the wisdom of how God has made the world, that's going to come smack up against, and especially this what we took, Truman calls this the sort of internal therapeutic stuff, because it's the direct opposite of what it's looking for. I think we also want to add, but even if we were to wholly affirm, I don't think the research says that's going to make all the difference. So what's really interesting is there's this whole thing about social stigma, and now we're learning, to have better societies and so on, and if only we were accepted. But there's really good research. I mean, the latest stuff just 2 or 3 years ago from the APA in the States, showing that, yes, when people move from areas of higher social stigma on sexuality and gender to areas of lower stigma, yes, certainly their rates of suicidal ideation and even suicide attempts, they do decrease, but they certainly don't go away. Like the starkest movement would be like something from 24% to 20% rates.
But that's terribly high.
I mean, it's terribly high.
20 is just high as well.
So we want to say two things. We want to say, clearly stigma does make some difference. Quite obviously it does. So we don't want to be pretending it doesn't. But there's this thing that remains.
And if we can't have a conversation about that, then 20% of people are still in that.
Well, that conversation got shut down, didn't it, in the late 70s when the APA first changed the DSM on this matter. Satanova's book is brilliant on showing homosexuality.
Well, we give the show notes to every thing you casually drop there.
We should do. We should put referral links so we can make a bit of commission.
Get back to Dave.
That's right.
I'm going to ask you another question.
Yeah.
Because we could go down this line for a long time. One of the other things I see, so the paper has this article, and then I read the comments section, and it's saying every second comment is separate church and state.
Yes.
So keep kids safe by separating the church from the state.
Separation of church and state is one of those vexed statements that everyone uses, and no one really knows what it means. So here in Australia, it's governed in the Constitution, section 116, which is a pretty simple statement, which says there should be no basically religious test for office. Mm. So you can't deny someone a job because of a government job because of their religious position, who they are, which is in one sense a very narrow statement, but we also want to go a broad principle. We just simply don't want to be discriminating against people because of that religious thing. But I think you said it to me a moment ago as we were chatting this through a little bit more. It's there actually to protect churches and others from the state. And when you read even in America, that's what it is.
There was a healthy suspicion of the state
among
the
populace.
That's right.
We don't want them interfering. We actually want to go hands off. Again, this is our space. We're not telling anybody else what to do. We're suggesting and proposing ways of living, of course, but we're not forcing anyone. But now it's become different. It's protecting almost the state and everyone the state is looking after, because now the state has become the great protector of everybody from the big bad
church.
Religious yeah. people.
And that's the myth thing. That's yeah. And obviously the next thing is, well, the Bible's always said these things, you know, it's been hammering people over the head on these issues all the
that's
time.
That's right.
What, let's get to it. What does yeah. the Bible have to say for us in this complex situation?
So it's got stuff to say as on the topics itself.
Yep.
So, and we can go back to, you know, Genesis 1, God made them male and female, a truth that Jesus mm. affirms. You can look at how humanity is the pinnacle of creation and the Genesis 1 with it's the way it's constructed and whether you take it literally or not. I think you still have to look at it as a series of binaries and then it's, humanity so is yeah. the great binary.
And you look at 1 and 2 and it's what is a human? What is a human for and who is a human for are critical issues in
Absolutely
Genesis.
Absolutely critical. So we're there for each other, but ultimately we're there
for God.
For
human
God.
Flourishing. The goal of human flourishing is not human flourishing in the Bible, is it?
No, it's God looking good.
Yes. Who,
and he ultimately, of course, which the language of glory is used, and he ultimately looks good in what he's done in the Lord Jesus Christ. And so
yes.
We truly find our sense of who we are. It's almost the opposite of where the world is today, outside of ourselves
yeah.
with this wonderful external frame of reference,
well,
Jesus
that's
himself.
So interesting because at a school I was speaking at recently, one of the year 12 students was very bright yeah. and considered, said, oh, maybe we're just like an onion. You peel the, and I said, but what's at the center of that?
Yeah.
And he kind of had that look yeah. of, I'm not quite sure how to answer that.
That's
if you
right.
peel every level of yeah. an onion down, you come to nothing. And is that, well, that's the risk.
That's the risk. So instead, we want to keep going, here's who we truly are. We're made by God to be in relationship with one another, but with him. So the primary crisis of the Bible is that we screw that up royally in every single way. And then God mounts this rescue plan in Jesus.
Which gives us confidence about what vision of human flourishing is, but also humility that we are also part of the problem.
Absolutely. And reality that we live in this broken world and we're waiting yeah. for Jesus to come back and making everything new. So then the question then flicks to, well, how do we live in this world in the meantime where we're not a theocracy, we live in a pagan yeah. government. But handily, that's how the very first Christians in the first century lived. And so we turn to some of the stuff in the New Testament on how they do that. Jesus with his render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's. And Paul, very helpfully in Romans 13, just reminding us we actually want to submit to the
yeah.
authorities and writing to the Christians in Rome, where maybe even Nero was
yeah,
on the throne.
That's
so
crazy,
that's the kind of submission
yeah.
we're talking about. But then also that the thing that he writes to Timothy in Ephesus, 1 Timothy 2, where he says, we ought to be praying for our kings and governors
yeah.
and so on, that we can live good and orderly lives in peace. So really the Christian agenda with governments is we want to be advocating for the good
yeah.
and encouraging them and praying that they would do the good, but also basically going, pray for them that they can just run the world in a way that just lets people
yeah.
be on their, do
Look,
their
I,
thing.
I struggle with that, but because my local MP yeah. and his office is literally 400 meters from my house.
Wow.
His picture's on that, and I get angry because of the things he says, and I decided, I'm going to pray for him.
Yeah.
Even though I don't agree with him, I
yeah.
need to pray for him.
Yeah.
Because he's made in the image of God.
Yes. Just,
and he's servant of the state.
Absolutely.
At that level.
And they mostly are well-intentioned,
yeah.
even if they're wrong in their intentions. And so I think that then builds a framework for us to go a right and proper respect still for government and mm. proper submission in its place. Pay your taxes, says the apostle. But also, it's not wrong for us to advocate for these good things.
No. But here, what can people do now? Should we all be taking our kids out of Christian schools and heading for the hills? If that might...
No, I think yeah. now is the time to, my God is, and you'll tell me what you think in a minute, Steve, my God is now is the time to carve out very clearly mm-hmm. what that space needs to look like. Now is the time to go, here it is, make sure that the people that are making the decisions understand clearly yeah. what our lines of...
Yeah, we cannot die the death of a thousand cuts.
No, no, which means we've also got to bolster ourselves inside. We've got to get really real
yeah.
about what's going on. I know you got...
Yeah, and look, I think one of the things too is we haven't discussed how do you keep that boundary. If you're in an open employment school, how do you make the center strong biblically?
Yeah.
And if you're in closed employment school, how do you keep that boundary line clear?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the complexity.
Yeah.
But you cannot die the death of a thousand cuts of schools in this because yeah. you'll eventually be nothing.
So how do they die that death? What are we seeing where they just go, oh, it won't be
yeah.
too bad. We'll just compromise on this thing.
Well,
what does that look like?
The hard thing for schools is you've got a cohort of teachers that might go, I agree with, I'll sign off on the lifestyle agreement and I'll publicly won't say anything in the school, but I don't agree with that myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, that doesn't fly because
no.
it leaks out of you, 100%.
Absolutely, and we send our kids to school to not just learn the facts, but learn them in a whole package. So, so holding the line on that, which is hard, right? Which is hard because I know lots of schools are finding it hard to find the teachers. Every time we do it, we're going to get criticized, not just externally, but internally. Uh-huh. So it's just being clear on what's important. I think I want to say as well, for all of us, what we actually need to do is to get involved when these rounds of debates are going in. So it's writing to the newspapers and going, actually, there's some of us who think a different way. Uh-huh. It's writing to the members of parliament who weigh the letters. They do.
I can
think of one politician who we got to the table to talk about something because of the weight of letters. They were conveniently busy for quite a while.
And schools can also say, we want to show you that being different actually works rather than how can we be vanilla.
Our kids are happier, they're flourishing.
All the stats prove it.
They're doing well. Carve it out. And if, when they come for us, be ready. Be realistic about it.
It has to be despite us, not because of us.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So there's a tough road ahead, Steve.
Yep.
Tough road ahead.
We can't gild the lily. It's going to be tough, but it can be done.
But where's Diana of Ephesus?
Yeah, where's Diana? Mouldering away as a rock or a little bit of a broken sort of tourist attraction.
That's right. And the dual citizen knows exactly where they're going and who's really in charge.
You've been listening to Dual Citizens. If you like what you heard, please follow us. Leave a review as well so it spreads the word and more people can hear what we're doing on Dual Citizens.